Monster Eater, Chapter 2. The seers Istath and Balesti gave Ramek directions to Azisthah, an ancient nexus of underground promenades which once served as trade routes, but have lain fallow ever since the citadel of Azisthah rescinded its protection of the passageways. The seers told him how to skirt the promenade tunnels using capillaries of stone broken into the earth around them, as the promenades were now haunted by robbers, cannibals, and creatures of innumerable natures. They told him which passageway would lead him away from their great cavern complex and begin his ascent to the surface. Then they saw him to a fissure in a chasm wall near Kalasda and bid him farewell, and he began down an unfamiliar path. Ramek walked down tunnel after tunnel, meeting only dead ends, backtracking wearily with an impending sense of doom as his stock of fortified Archaean dwindled. He met with a sump of freezing water in one tunnel and turned away from it, disbelieving that this could be the path. Eventually, he decided that he could not go down one more dead-end tunnel and return to the invisible water. Ramek took a deep breath and plunged fingertips first into the freezing water. The iciness consumed him like a monster's fatal bite, and he dragged himself through by the rocks, thrashing against the sump. He turned over in the water, pressing his hands into the clammy ceiling of the sump as if to brace against the mouth of his devourer, and raked himself along its fissures, his body tight as a trap and burning. He broke free of the water in the stalest air, and dust flitted from the water with foam as he flailed his way under the stony shore. He went on until visions of food swam in the darkness, and then bit and shook him with the urgency of the cold. He daydreamed of moist moss with rich longing, but knew he needed something of substance to give him an advantage, not merely the animation to plod along until an alien intelligence or dumb fate made him into another of the underworld's infinite victims. This would entail leaving the capillaries in which he crept and reaching the highways of death, the concourses and thoroughfares that once lit the depths with light, thronging and trickling from grand nodes of sorcery and haruspicy, all the way out to the far-flung places where the things that were brought were made. Ramek found a smooth, bowl-shaped recession half-tucked in the wall, and knew this was a receptacle of water of millennia, underlined by the dead riverbeds of rock bleeding off from it like crow's feet. Ergo, there would be a winding chute above, originating the place where water had fell for aeons, which in this vast complex would inevitably be hooked to the concourses and their once great thirst. Ramek stood in the empty bowl and placed his hands on the wall, tracing them to the rim of the tunnel which he knew would be there. He leapt into the wall and kicked himself up into the presumed vertical corridor, which would crack his skull if it wasn't there. He found it was present, and threw his arms out to either side, suspending himself in the air. He split his legs until his feet were just below his hands, braced them on the time-worn wall of the well, and inched himself up until he was spread eagle in the miniature chasm. He repeated this in a state of stoic focus, until he could do it in a state of detachment, his mind better spent on thoughts of his lover's scent than on the cold hardness of a nameless chute that might lead him down a corridor of dead-end starvation. As the tunnel curved, Ramek's imaginary image of the stone beneath his fingertips began to be joined by a visual intimation of the same. First a mind's eye synesthesia where the rock he felt had a visual rhythm, until Ramek realized he could see the contours that he was feeling, and then a moment later he saw his hands. There was a light at the top of the tunnel, and it illuminated what lay before him. The tunnel above became a curving half-fishhook and would deposit him on at least a brief plane of flat stone. The tunnel came level, and Ramek was bathed and blinded by orange light. The tunnel opened like a suppliant's palms into the cosmically level surface of this complex's thoroughfares. The orange light wept keenly from the filed teeth of a great orange geode, whose walls had been stripped out to give light into the thoroughfare's pillared promenade. Even from this low aperture, Ramek could see debris around the mouth of his hideaway. There was corpse dust too desiccated for any mouth, and a rusted and torn-off strip of steel so corroded that it lay beyond the industry of those who preyed on this tunnel. Ramek brought the grand thoroughfare into his vision sliver by sliver, satisfying himself that he hadn't been spotted, before catching his next painstaking glimpse. When he convinced himself no obvious killer lay in the great chamber's rocky wings or its vault, which was raftered in darkling bronze, He placed his fingers on the promenade, ready to slide back at the first unexpected sensation. Gradually he rose from the hole and listened. Deafening silence, the watchword of the underworld. The promenade was engraved with ornate threads leading to other underworlds, and symbols of glory infinitely elongated for the wary downward gaze of the abyssal Argonauts. Yet it was scattered with waste that was universally undesirable, and this was well because fresh food would simply be a trap for the starving. There were tatters of vestments so hung with the alien microbes of other realms that they glistened silver or frothy, rusty red, with colonies held in stasis with the cold, and these would become a desperate, strangling poison if introduced into the body of the average underworlder. The corpses of things killed here but never devoured had been reduced to dark patches like people annihilated by solar fire, now nothing but stained remnants where their bodies had bled themselves into dew and dust. Ramek set off slowly down the promenade in the direction paralleling his path in the capillaries. He gazed at each new wreckage lying half-smeared in the amber shadow. He came to a passage in the wall, continuing a ramp up into unknown environs. It was rimmed with carved cracks, depicting tectonic wrath tearing apart the ancient enemies of whoever had built this passageway. Holes had been cut in half with their denizens pouring, horrified, in the abyss, like sand from ruptured hourglass. Ramek peered up into the ramp, which was striated like spiderwebs so as to catch wagon wheels. He saw two men kneeling, just hooded shadows, yet unmistakable for their relative softness. This way was barred, for no man would risk a parley in a realm so fell as this, and Ramek drew his nose back from the frame with imperceptible slowness. He pivoted delicately away and assumed a steady stance to think, not even touching the wall for fear of imparting a sound or tremor. When turning to face the cavern, he saw men advancing on him from the geode. They were muscle-bound and pale as oysters, and had hidden themselves in some of the geode's crevices. Ramek thought that it was impossible that they'd seen or heard him without him seeing or hearing them. A moment later, he knew why they had. Strange, flat, pale serpents wound their way around the men's bodies hungrily, as if licking the flesh they wore in anticipation of the flesh they would eat. One man seemed to have just one eye, but actually it was one of these flatworms emerging from his socket. It lapped at the air with little flickers, and Ramek knew this was the culprit. Its dozen radial teeth were interspersed with fine-haired scenting pits. The men were pointing crossbows loaded with dull harpoons, whose tips were like putty. Ramek knew that whatever these bolts were would be more dangerous than steel. He had one chance. The only thing that could save him was an interaction of the two groups and the inevitable ensuing chaos, assuming that the groups weren't related, in which case he was doomed. Ramek dove into the mouth of the rampway. Crossbows snapped and bolts lashed the ground around him, skipping or striking and then instantly curling towards him. These were living things, and they sought to enter the warmth of his body. Ramek glanced up at the ramp for the breath of a heartbeat, and the men at the top were already reeling, caught up in their cloaks, falling back. They mutually kicked at a thick metal disc which rested between them, and it rolled down the ramp towards Ramek, grinding at the grooves in the stone. It trailed a waxen rope behind it. It was an explosive petard. Ramek apprehended a move that would give him a glimmer of a chance. He knew that he would have to achieve perfection in his next movement, or be devoured by flame or tearing teeth. He put his hands flat on the stone and drew his knees to his chest. Pink, eyeless serpents reared up around him. He launched himself upwards toward the protruding and engraved fresco that ran around the ramp's passageway. The half-hollow copper disc rolled down in the center of his eye. He jammed his powerful fingers into a carved crack in the fresco, which was depicted as cutting free an inhabited stalactite. Decadent stone faces screamed from its windows. The pale men below were loading new hibernating serpents into their crossbows while glaring at the rampant consternation of the rough noise of the disc. Ramek pulled himself up parallel with the ground, his chest pressed against the roof of the ramp, his legs jutting out over the promenade below. Then he pulled his lower body upwards, spearing his legs vertically into the air, his head pointing downwards as the petard came to a stop at the base of the ramp. He placed his knees on the fresco's protruding surface above, then rapidly pushed himself up on top of it, perched like a cat. One of the icy pale men had a similar premonition and raised a hand in the air. Five gruesome spine flatworms emerged from beneath his fingernails in a mist and spray of ichor, They leapt past finger flesh with a flittering noise, attaching themselves to a bronze crossbeam above. They reeled him up from the promenade with a straining of sinew. That was when the petard blew. Romek was jolted by a thunderclap that cracked genuine fissures into the fresco's mantelpiece. The crossbowmen had advanced while Romek was planning the gymnast, confident of having him cornered, but they were now caught by the shrapnel. Their bodies were instantly lightened and loosened into nigh unrecognizability, bones broken and halved in length, organs cut out and deposited across the stones, muscles cut and compacted inside loosened tufts of flesh. Amidst their ruined and inanimate bodies, their parasites wound and gnashed, being snipped and perforated by whatever wicked shards or spheres had been employed against their carriers. The two men in hoods came to the mouth of the rampway, and they gazed out into the hall. Their cloaks were inky black, and were stalagmite lamprey-hide, which drank the water and sediment from above, growing tough as they did so. The men's eyes had been replaced by black sight stones of a type unknown to Romek. They carried steel discs with razored rims, clockwork chakrams that would set free whirling blades when thrown on their terminal flights, gaining impetus before petering out and laying inanimate until recovered, rewound and refurnitured. One of them spotted the crossbowman who had rappelled to the chamber's canopy, and he thumbed a latch on his clockwork chakram, which instantly sprang forth blades from its top and bottom with a clang and a whir, seeming to become weightless as prepared to throw it. The crossbowman was already taking aim at the corridor and fired with an echo in the rafters and whoosh into the man's upper ribs. He dropped his steel contraption and it went whirring and sparking across the carved surface of the chamber and broke apart on the wall as the man gasped and fell on his rear, his mouth ajar. The second cloaked sentinel activated his chakram and it whirred across the promenade with astonishing speed, shearing the crossbowman in half, his guts pouring out across the crossbar in a misty spray, and his legs and hips falling to the stone below. His five chitinous parasites were wrapped around the bronze, their thousands of little teeth digging into it. They'd been amputated by the mechano-chakram and curled around the crossbeam in agony, crumpling the bronze beneath them, as the man they inhabited threw his arms across the bar and gazed gaping at his legs and crotch and waist, with his shaven guts weeping blood and shit and ichor into a thick stained patch near his lower body. Romek's eyes went wide as the rubbery bolt in the cloaked man began wriggling around in the air, as it wormed its way into his body. He seized up for a moment, then relaxed as it disappeared inside. Then he panted, pitching a tent in his trousers. He drew a mechano-chakram and threw it through his comrade's back. The man fell forward through a mist of his own blood, his chin on his sternum, and collapsed into a curl inside his cut-open cloak. Romek traced his fingers into a crack of stone which seemed to have remained strong and fell forward into space, flipping, and caught himself on the fresco's mantle. He twisted and released himself with a trajectory into the man who'd been turned against his companion. Romek landed feet first on the man as he was standing up, knocking him back down and cracking his skull on stone with a force that would have concussed and stunned any man. But as soon as Romek's palms touched the stone on either side of the man, he sprang his head forward and tried to bite out Romek's throat. Romek kicked himself back and pushed the man's gnashing head away, but the man lunged after Romek, who hit the rough stone ramp and the promenade surface hard and started kicking at the ramp of the man, trying to get back. The man fell on Romek and began to claw at his face and neck, crushing into Romek's eye and raking his gums. He was trying to bite Romek's throat all the while, stubble and hot breath pushing in and in as Romek pushed him away. Romek's shoulder was pressing into the cloaked man who'd been killed. Romek desperately relinquished one half of his defense and reached into the man's cloak, hunting for a mechano-chakram. The parasite in his assailant's body lurched his way half free of his throat in a spray of ichor and blood into Romek's cheek and hair. The wet, soft thing wound its way around Romek's neck and began to strangle out his daylights while pressing against his cheek like a tear of flesh. It began boring its way past his furiously clamped eyelid and underneath his eye. Romek screamed, reaching through the blood-soaked folds until his palm was cut against the cold steel disc. Romek grasped it, yanked it free, and thumbed the latch on top of it. Instantly, he felt something violently unspool inside of the mechano-chakram, and it sprang to life in his hand. He only had a split second to dig its whirling rim into the top of the cloaked man's head before it sprang away from him, running down the length of the cloaked man's body and skipping up the ramp in a shower of sparks and powdered stone. The man was cut open like a sausage. Blood ran in sheets on a Romek from the man's crown and crotch. The parasite had been cut up inside him and had lost most of its strength. It wove around in the air as Romek tore it free of his eye socket and unwound it from his neck. Romek kicked himself free and took the parasite in both hands, and tore it away from the bloody trough that was the dead man's body. He wrung it in his hands until human blood and unctuous guts poured free from both ends, and then he sucked it down his throat, biting and chewing as it went. It tasted like salty human flesh coated in a peach syrup and saline reduction. Its deliciousness astounded him. He told himself that this was just starvation, and hunted through the split man's cloak until he found an obsidian medical lancet. He went out to the slaughtered bodies and the bald, pale crossbowmen. Romek rooted through their guts and eviscerated flesh, loosened by its hollowing, and drew out dead strips of parasite, or those that still lived. He squeezed them out and devoured them standing, or down on all fours. He raked his lancet ice-pick style through their cooling bodies, exposing hot furrows where telltale flecks of pearl-white flesh writhed or lay still, and these he tore free with his foot on the corpse, swallowing the dead parasites until he could stand no more, utterly sated and fully able to vomit. He sat back for a moment in the wallow of human blood. He was still unsatisfied, mightily fatigued after his ordeal, but aware he must depart or face predators and scavengers brought by the noise and blood. He gazed at the bronze crossbar where the warrior had sought refuge, his body hugging it in rigor mortis. His five parasites had crawled out and across the bar, seeking a last chance that was never there, leaving thousands of tiny holes in the bronze behind them. They wrapped the bar up now, inanimate, and there they'd remain until they became food or fossil or dust. Satisfied, Romek stood and took the last mechano chakram of the cloaked man in hand. The men had been watching one direction but not the other. Ergo, whatever was behind them was on their side. Romek melted back to the water chute, the capillaries, and began his descent with a full stomach. I hope you've been enjoying Monster Eater. I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks, starting tomorrow, and I'll be unable to make any updates whatsoever, you know, all that time. But after April 16th, we will be resuming our scheduled programming. Join us for Romek's encounter with a creature referred to by another character as a milking worm, and later something called, or conceptualized as, an osteophage. Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.